And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
In studio, Dr. Frank Tambury and Keith Cernick. We're just, you know, yakking it up as we're just like, because we can. And, you know, I tell you, are we getting hooked up by Donna or what?
I mean,
we got our bulletproof coffees on a regular basis. We got our, smoothies, you know. And you guys got different colored smoothies. She loves you guys more or something or what? She gave you a different kind.
She does love us more.
Yeah, probably. You know, you are better looking. So we'll go ahead and sit here and enjoy our day. Thank you, Donna. One thing that I wanted to make sure we got back on is go ahead and finish. You know, Dr. Frank wanted to go all Austrian economics on us on the discussion last night and finish up with the petrodollar thing. Go ahead and finish up what you want to say.
Well, I mean, it's a huge area, and Keith, I'm glad you brought up that comment. Before Keith did, I want to talk about, we've discussed before on the show about the petrodollar and how important it is to understand this concept, right? Because, you know, the dollar, of course, this whole economy is going to go under. We all know this. We're all disciples of Dr. Paul and others of the Austrian school. More and more people are realizing that it is a problem. They just don't understand why. The Keynesians, or at least modern Keynesian, because, you know, the original Keynes view hasn't really been tried, and there's some truth to it. But the modern Keynesian model are people today who don't understand what money is. They don't understand that something has to back currency. They just think that if everyone agrees that this piece of paper has value, then it has value. That's why they look at a piece of metal, shiny metal that's yellow, they look at it as no different than a piece of paper. They don't understand that there's value behind and how gold has value. They really don't understand that, and that's for another discussion. But in 1971, we got off the gold standard. And then, you know, somehow our economy, the dollar's still had support. And it's been a question for me for many years about how. And I'm always told, well, it's because, you know, America exceptionalism, the fact that we have a strong military, we have man on the moon, we have Elvis and Michael Jackson, people just want the dollar. But it's really the most, because of McDonald's. The most brilliant, and I mean this in a dark sense, but one of the most, probably the historical brilliant treaties, deals, forget Donald Trump, the deal of the millennia was from Dr. Henry Kissinger, because he's the guy that did the ultimate deal. He created the petrodollar, and he's the one that realized, whether intentionally or not, that after we were off the gold standard in 71, that people were not going to be buying our debt unless the dollar was backed by something, because we just ripped everybody off. We said, we'll pay you back in gold if you give us a loan, right? And then we switched it on them and said, oh, remember that gold that we're going to back you? Never mind, do over, but you get all out of this fancy paper. You know, it's got nice green ink on there. You know, you can get all this paper. Well, they said, thanks, but no thanks. Well, how do we deal with this bugaboo, as Richard Nixon famously said, about being off the gold standard? How do you back the currency? And what Kissinger did was, he figured, if we can't back it by gold, we can back it by black gold, which is, as the Beverly Hillbillies mentioned, which is oil.
Texas tea,
and that's oil. So Kissinger went to Saudi Arabia, went to King Saud, and said, hey, I got a little proposal for you, my friend. How about this? You guys can stay in your palace and have your 13 virgins, your Mercedes, and everything else while your people starve, and I know there's a lot of people who don't like that, you know, a lot of uprisings to keep, you know, kick you out of the palace and treat and feed your people, but we will support you to be your, you know, the grand poobah of your country with our troops, our aircraft carriers, our men and women, our lives, and we will do that for you on our debt, because we'll pay for it. We'll keep you as your, we'll be your bodyguard and keep you in office. All we ask for is one thing, and that is that anytime you sell your oil, which is the only export they have, you will only sell it for U.S. dollars. That's it. Anyone, if the Russians want oil, if Zimbabwe wants oil, if Sweden wants oil because it snows up there and they want to heat their homes, if any country in the world wants to compete in the world economy and have automobiles, guess what? You need to hold U.S. dollars to buy the oil. That was the brilliant conceit that of Henry Kissinger and that administration.
Well, the reason it worked with House Assad in Saudi Arabia was because not only did they have a lot of oil, it was near the surface, it was cheap to produce, and it was sweet crude. It wasn't like tar sands, and it took a lot of processing and that kind of stuff. So it's like, you take it out of the ground, you put it in your tank. I mean, well, not that much, but I mean, it's getting there. So, yeah, Saudi Arabian sweet crude was the standard. That's what you... So, if you got that, and you used a dollar, one, you could buy it. Two, it was cheaper, you know. And three, it was, you know, there was no, it was the best value. So that's what propped up the dollar. So when Keith brings this up, he goes, what happens when the petrodollar goes? Well, what happens? All those dollars flood back into the United States. And you got hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen. And now they're starting. That's why they got to get a control on Iran. That's selling oil for gold to India. And China's doing a deal. China was in Libya taking on a bunch of oil production and all that, too. And they went and invaded that. You think the Chinese forgot? You know, they're going, oh, hell no. And, of course, they want to protect the sea lanes to be able to tanker wherever they're going to go. You know, Malaysia is in. You know, this is much larger, and it's all based on the petrodollar that Kissinger did, which was part of the energy backing, which is Patrick Wood's thing on technocracy. The technocrats and this Brzezinski thing that they were trying to create a currency based on energy. And Kissinger was the one that forwarded that. So this has been something that's been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's been developing. And no one really was public about it or understood or got Generation Next to get it. Other than Dr. Ron Paul. He's going, blah, 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 blah. This is what's going to undo the empire. And when it happens, you better have a philosophy or some kind of deal or something you're going to do, Constitution, build, something, you know, that's going to be the foundation for the rebuild. The cover, if you go to the front page of Freedom's Phoenix, I'll move it back up to the top, the newspaper, the cover depicts this. You know, it's just, you know, the empire of BS finally ends up in a mushroom cloud. Freedom's Phoenix rises from the ashes. That was the point in 96 when we started coming up with this concept. And then we just waited until video hit the internet. Boom, 05, we started doing it. It's been over 10 years that we had Freedom's Phoenix with the understanding that this is what was coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Keith says something, and they're like, "What?"
He didn't say it went over his head. And I want to, I definitely want to give Keith out
for
this.
No, they
know.
They just don't want to address it.
But the petrodollar though is something that's been so underappreciated, even amongst conservatives who I guess they really just don't know. I hear conservatives on the radio, TV. They really don't know themselves this angle. They just think somehow the dollar is just wanted because people just love America. No, it's because of the oil. And if you want to understand, so many things come into focus. We start to understand why we have these wars, why what happened in Benghazi. Well, Benghazi was another story with Clinton, but why why is it so important to have an embassy in Benghazi? It's Libya. And how did we get that? Because we ousted Gaddafi, right? And how did he die? Well, he was killed by support from America. And why? When did it happen? When Gaddafi decided to create a new currency called the dinar, which basically says
that gold backing.
It's gold backing, which means you can buy my oil for gold. You don't need U.S. dollars. And any country that tries to sell their oil for something that's not U.S. dollars, like rubles for the Russians or in gold, they either get wiped out or we go to war with Russia or that country that they're backing. This explains why we have an unprecedented number of military bases that are active in the Middle East. Just Google active
of military bases, Middle East. Do it right now for image, and you will see an ungod number of
and
bases.
And the largest embassy.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Thursday, gold is down $12 at $1,247 per ounce. Silver is 53 cents lower at $16.40 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $448. Compared to Monday's open, gold is down $30 and silver off by 80 cents. This is a great time to buy on the dip. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Well, I see a whole lot of people dying, don't blame me, but point the crooked little fingers at everybody else, spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves, victim of this, victim of that.
Eagles came back and they came with that, and I'm going, wow, freaking A, man, they knew better than the Eagles to go, nah, it's all about you being a wimp. Well, I am really concerned about, there's a lot of things that are going on that's got me going, ouch, and one of those things is Trump meeting with Kissinger. What the heck is that about, Frank?
Yeah, so that's where this is all going, is that when you understand, because Trump met with Henry Kissinger this past week. And when I heard that, I went, I mean, my ears shot up like the coyotes eating your chickens from the first hour. I'm thinking this is a real problem. Not problem, but there's something brewing here. What frustrated me was that every news site that I saw that reported this, it was just an afterthought. Heck, the MSNBC people, they said, well, you know, he met with Kissinger and we just have to report it because I guess it's supposed to be news. But, you know, Henry Kissinger is, you know, he's this old politician. He's not really involved in anything anymore, and we're not really sure why they're meeting, but for what it's worth,
well, he said that they were having a lot of phone conversations.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the news has been reporting this as like, well, it's just some deal. Kissinger, remember him back in the day, you know, down with the pet rock, remember
that guy,
him?
That first job that Obama got through Kissinger?
Yeah.
That guy there?
I mean, this
Obama.
What I'm realizing, well, I mean, nothing new, but the fact that the news did not see this as significant underlines the point, the problem, which is that Americans do not understand not only economics, which is clear, but they have no understanding of the petrodollar and how brilliant, in a sense, of what Kissinger's move was, and how everything that you do, when you buy with using your credit card, the fact that you see that debt clock in New York Times Square go higher and higher and higher, and somehow we just still seem to survive. I mean, that's what my mother often tells me is, well, Frank, you know, there must be smarter people out there dealing with the economy because somehow it still works, and I understand her point of view.
Smarter people.
These people have figured it out, and it's not just her; it's most Americans.
And they took my
somehow,
money.
You know, I'm the prostate guy, and all of us we're regular people. But somehow, when you're a politician, and you're running government, math works different somehow. And so, this magic math that occurs, we can just keep going. No, the reason that we're able to walk on clouds like the Wile E. Coyote going off the cliff is because he hasn't read the book called Gravity yet. And in this case, people have not understood what is backing the dollar, which is really nothing, but it is, in essence, it's our bullying of other countries around the world with our troops. So that is the profound treaty or deal that we have that explains the dollar. It explains what's backing it. It explains why we have troops in the Middle East. It explains why we're having wars with countries. It explains the Mujahideen, which eventually is the group that turned into Al Qaeda. They were the group that we supported back in the day to take on the Russians when Russia was in Afghanistan because they were trying to get oil without having to hold dollars, right? So you have to understand that if you're our enemy, the last thing that they want is to have to use U.S. dollars. They don't want dollars because we're the enemy, right? They don't want to support our economy and our military. So the Russians, during the Cold War, were trying to get oil independent of the dollar. So that's where, why and where the battle lines were often created in the Middle East with with Afghanistan and many of these countries is because they wanted oil without dollars. So that's what this was. It wasn't the encroachment of communism.
But what happens when oil isn't the commodity? One, they try to give us the impression that we're at peak oil. And I remember, how was his name, Mike Rupert or Ruprecht, whatever, Ruprecht. Oklahoma. Anyway, so it's a long story. What happened was, he'd come on the show, and I talked to him, and the first time that I had talked to him, I've had him on my show, but it was when I was producing for Charles Goyette. And I go to him, and I do some pre-interviews. I talk to guys, I got to go through the spiel and everything. So I'm talking to him, and I'm going, okay, peak oil, how do you know? And he goes, who told you? I mean, what, you got a 2-mile dipstick or something? I mean, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, the Saudi Arabian government puts a report on. I'm going, oh, hell.
Clears that up.
I guess we know that. So then we were starting to do some research, having shows on abiotic oil, which they're finding that oil, hydrocarbons, is a product of the crust, of the heat and pressure, and that's why these oil wells keep filling back up. So I'm going, they try to give you the impression that it's rare, and it's running out. We're running out. No, we're not, okay? That doesn't mean that we need to stay on hydrocarbons.
Right.
It's not necessarily that's a good thing, but I'm going, now, that is not the problem. The problem is this, them trying to use it as, it's like De Beers and diamonds. First, I got to make everybody think you got to have a diamond to begin with.
Right.
And then you got to go pay a gazillion dollars for it when they're controlling the market. So I'm going, no. On the solar as a competing energy source, I've for years and decades, keep hearing again getting poo-pooed. On Freedom's Phoenix right now, they have transparent glass you can use for windows that are now solar panels. Okay, you can also turn it to how much shade you want with electricity. You can also, and I'm telling you, there is an entire new in the newspaper. I reference two young teenagers. One is a genius in the medical field, coming up all kinds of different, using nanotube and proteins to do $5 and 5-minute tests that cost $800 kind of thing, like a Theranos deal for pancreatic cancer and such. Then you have this other Taylor kid that built his own fusion reactor or fission reactor, and he's going, he designs entire reactors with 30 year lifespans that you bury under your house. And he's going, what is the problem here? The future is so outside of everything that they're building around that I don't think those understand how antiquated they are. They're just now starting to get a hint of it, and they're desperate.
Well, it could be. It's funny. Again, it could be maybe King Saud or the Saudis are realizing herring's on the wall, just like the tobacco companies began realizing it was on the wall that tobacco would be basically banned from this country, and they began switching their assets quietly from tobacco assets to other assets. If you look at Philip Morris and those kind of companies. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that's what they're doing. Because what also happened with Saudi Arabia this week is that they finally announced, after 3 or 4 decades, their holdings of treasury bonds, right? First time ever. They never released it. They released their amount, and they are actually, now assuming they're accurate reporting here, number 13 of all the countries that owe the debt. So
what's the dollar amount, do you know?
I'll pull up in a second.
I mean, they were saying $750 billion, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was $117 billion. So basically, they finally revealed it. It's $116.8 billion technically in treasury bonds. It makes it the 13th biggest or largest foreign owner.
That's not as much as I thought it.
No, I know. Well, that
it might have been going
my
down.
My point is, is that accurate? I don't even know if that's accurate, because many of these countries are trying to downplay the debt and their gold holdings, to keep this manipulation going. I have other countries we'll talk after the break of who else owns the debt. But then the real question I'm going to ask both of you is what really went on with that sit down with Henry Kissinger? That was not a nothing meeting. The question is, did Trump understand the petrodollar before going in, or has he just explained it at that meeting? Peter Schiff thinks it's a dog whistle move, and we'll talk about that.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You are listening to Ernest Hancock.
With less conversation, a little more action and patience. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
A little more pride, a little less fun. A little less pride, a little more smart. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfy me.
Baby.
Satisfy me, baby.
Satisfy me, baby. You know, I'm still waiting on, you know, Trump to, you know, show me he really gets and understands and damn. You know, so you wanted to go over some other countries,
right?
On stuff. Let's do that. Go.
Yeah. So we're talking about as far as the debt, as far as who owns debt overall. Foreign debt reserves are number one at $6.175 trillion. That's all foreign debt. Well, I'll give you the breakdown in a moment.
Damn.
Under that is the Federal Reserve that owns $2.5 trillion. Mutual funds are $1 trillion. State and local governments, they of course own debt, including pension funds. That's $803 billion. Private pension funds, $403 billion. Banks, $515 billion. Insurance companies, interesting, $293 billion. U.S. savings bonds at the bottom now, $174 billion for the poor schmoes that still invest in those. And then there's other, which is basically all of your kids, grandkids, and progeny yet to be born.
You know, in the mid-70s, when I was young, I bought treasuries. Uh-huh. And the only reason I buy them, and I didn't have an account at the bank, because they, you know, fees and all that kind of, I paid for a safety deposit box, which was like nothing, $10 a year or some crap like that. Mm-hmm. I had a safety deposit box. One of my neighbors was a branch manager of a savings and loan or whatever by Metro Center here in Phoenix. And I would go down there and I'd take all my money and lawn mowing and whatever and kind of newspaper, whatever the heck I had. And I would, enough to buy a savings bond. And the reason was, is because I knew you can't cash it in or touch it for 3 months, okay? At the time, that's what I remember.
Yeah.
So it was kind of forced savings for me. I could go, and then I got my, you know, 3 pennies in interest or whatever, but that was not why I did it. I did it so that I wouldn't spend it. That was kind of my, you know, forced I don't get to spend it thing. So that was the only time I ever did anything like that. You look at the interest later and you learn, you go, nah, what a bad investment, you know, and you don't get to use it. So this, I want to hear the breakdown of the six whatever trillion by country of who has our debt.
Well, that comes next, right. But the thing, it's interesting about the savings bonds, though, is it used to be when we were gold-backed currency, they were a fairly stable investment because it was backed by gold. Once we got off the gold standard, that's when these treasury bills became a joke. I mean, you know, Uncle Ralph would be the type of person for your birthday when you're 5 years old to buy you a treasury bond, and that used to be a good gift. Now it's a joke.
Inflation ate it up.
Well, inflation ate it up.
You got your 3%, 4%, 5%, big freaking deal.
And now, of course, with the interest rates being played with, there's no return. I mean, I didn't get T-bills when I was younger, but my mother, she was wonderful. She taught me about saving with my annual Christmas club. So that's how I learned about saving and not touching it for a year. Now, as far as the rest of the debt, the $6 trillion that are foreign-owned, any guesses who's number one, guys? Should be easy.
Dutch.
Japan.
No, China. China. Now, China actually moved up to second place back in 2008 or somewhere there. And guess who had second place before? It was the United Kingdom. United Kingdom was second in debt holdings. China beat the United Kingdom.
You know, the Dutch used to be, for a long time, the highest, because they were, you know, big commerce.
They are the traders. They were, during the Renaissance,
they were the trades. What's their level?
I'm not sure where they are here.
Netherlands,
so China is number one now. The importance I'm trying to bring up is that they leapfrogged everybody over the last decade or 15 years up to second place, now first place. They own 1.3 trillion of that debt, of that $6 trillion. That's of January 2016. They are the largest foreign holder. Japan is next at $1.1 trillion. And, of course, Japan and China both have in common is that they have their export industry. So they, of course, want to basically prop up the dollar. They want to buy our debt to keep the dollar high, because the higher the dollar is, then the cheaper their goods are and the more that they can export, since they are nothing but an export economy, right? So that's why they're doing it. The problem is they can only keep up our debt bubble so far for so long until
the Chinese start buying property and all the houses here in America.
Yeah, and what they're doing privately is they're secretly buying gold reserves, right, which they're not telling everyone about all the gold they're buying. As they're buying the gold, and then our dollar is being, you know, blown out. And once King Saud, or I should say the Saudis as a whole, decide that they don't want dollars anymore, I'm sorry, that they don't want to sell for dollars. Why? Because the countries that they're forcing to buy with dollars, when those countries finally say, we don't want the dollars because they're not worth anything, and
we have the renminbi sitting here ready to go.
Have the renminbi, and now, so once the world says that China's they don't want currency. The dollar, then the Saudis, they want to sell their oil. If nobody wants the dollars anymore, then they will be forced to have to sell the oil for other currencies, and our currency is dead. It is absolutely game over. So now the real question is, what will cause the rest of the world not to want the dollar? Now, there's a lot of reasons, and we're getting there one way or the other, but this next point, the ultimate deal that Trump's going to have to make, is probably what's also going to set off the sell-off of the dollar, and that is when Trump gets in, and I say this as a compliment to him because someone has to do this, and no other president candidate has the gonads to do so, but he's going to have to negotiate the deal of the century, which is to ask all of these foreign holders for a haircut. They want a haircut. So basically, those of you that invested in your little investment 401k and you expect a certain return, let's say 5% or 8% return, imagine that you put that money in expecting 10 years to get 8% return.
But the government lied!
And then they turn around and they say, not only you're not getting your 8% on your investment, we're going to give you 50% of the principal you put in. And you better enjoy it and appreciate it and thank us, because otherwise we're going to give you 20% and you'll get nothing. That is what we're going to do to the entire country after we screwed them over in 71 and said, we're going to give you gold. Now we're not giving you gold. We're going to give you dollars. And now, how many 30 years later, we're going to do the same thing where, yes, you invested in the paper money. We're not even giving you the same amount of paper money or backed goods now. When that happens, and the average investor and when these countries that are holding this debt say, if we're forced to take a haircut, the rest of the world will not want a dollar. I mean, why would you want to invest in a dollar when the people who invested got blown out?
Trump has been saying, they've been going, when he said that we're going to have to, I don't know, repudiate or discount or haircut, or he was saying something, and they go, whoa, you're going to renege on the obligation. Go, no. We just print more money. I mean, we're doing, what is he actually saying? What is it that he's proposing?
Well, in many ways...
Not what you say he might have to do.
In many ways...
What is he saying he's
going to do? Well, technically, he's not. I mean, he's... I think he's brilliantly staying in the margins. Normally, we look at that as being a politician. They don't say anything. He's negotiating. Trump is acting more brilliant than even I gave him credit for, in my opinion. And I was saying this off the air. Is that Trump, I think... I mean, I know in my heart of hearts, is he's doing this because he believes that what he's doing is right.
America.
I don't think it's... I mean, yeah, he's got an ego and all the rest, but
America.
But he's putting his whole brand on the line to really save this country and what he believes. So I just come from that perspective for one moment. Some of you may disagree. But the thing is, if he is, I think he is running as this so-called independent anti-establishment to say, I'm not really a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not owned by any of them. So right now, that scares people because he doesn't have an ideology everyone can label him with. But by not having an ideology for people to lock him down now, it gives him the flexibility to have more leverage later on.
To and do what? With
and
the,
because
the
what
debt.
I think he's going to have to do are the two deals of the century. One is he's going to have to be the one to go to each country and say, what kind of haircut are you willing to take and what do you want in return? That is a hell of a deal to be asking people who we owe $1.4 trillion to. That's number one. And the second deal he's going to have to do is that after or when he is making this negotiation to cut, you know, back what you're going to get on this investment, he's got to keep the rest of the world from now dumping the dollar, and more importantly, keeping the Saudis from keeping this petrodollar deal, as much as it's created these problems, because if people get the haircut and the Saudis drop the petrodollar, it's all done. So those are the two deals that Trump's going to have to make, but how does he talk about this without showing all of his cards? That's where
and how the
dog
whistle
is.
Get it done when you got China repatriating all their gold. Shanghai is just freaking loud. Yep. Gold and silver, and they're getting ready to do a currency backed by, and you know, the pox on all our houses.
Yep.
Then what?
Yep.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car, passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, go, go.
There's no stopping us. Yeah, you just go to a Queen concert with Keith, and you know why they call it Queen. Okay, well, we're going and he kept his shirt on. Okay, what we're going to do is, that's why he calls him Tarzan to Keith. Yeah, you know, that's good. I was talking to Keith, and I'm going, you really think China is going to go? And go look into the third hour. I just put the graphic up. And, you know, Keith was like, I did not know this. So you go look in the third hour, and I have the billboard that China's been putting up at international airports all over the world. And it's RMB New Choice, your premium bank of blah, blah, blah services of JMB, the world currency. So what they're saying?
Wow, that is huge!
You didn't know this? This has been going on for like a year.
No, I know they've been plugging it. I didn't see it like marquee billboards at airports.
Big, huge. You're like, world currency is freaking. We're gonna kick your ass.
We are so done. This
Bank of China.
The U.S. dollar is done.
See, Frank,
when they're
Frank
advertising
didn't, Frank
this
didn't
in
know
airports.
That either.
Well, I knew they were plugging it.
No. This is billboards everywhere around the world.
That's
international. You go land something. In the airport of. Sing a, you know, of Sydney, London.
But Bernie, I don't know why we don't see them in Times Square. How come we don't see those billboards around here? I wonder why.
Who says you don't?
No.
Let's
take
a look.
I wonder why.
You know, see, China World Currency, Billboards America. Let's see what we get here. See, this is, that's why when I'm on the show, I look at the news, you know, a bunch, all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And and after a while, certainly when you got some philosophical understanding, you start to see a trend.
Yeah,
you know, and I can see the flavor of things and the back and forth and who and what and where. And you go to, you know, banks, these currency exchanges in Mexico or whatever. And you'll see, you know, little signs for China this or little something. You can just feel it.
Yeah, you see the pattern ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, I saw it in Libya with the oil thing. Boom. We bombed
them. Whoa, damn. Nice one, Ernie. You know, I have to. Uh-huh. I'm wondering too. It might be interesting where these billboards are. I would probably bet money, Bitcoin, that is, that they are found in the countries with the highest debt. So China probably has the most billboards. Then Japan, which is number two in the debt. Number three, as far as countries owning the most U.S. treasuries, is the United Kingdom. That's number three. Then we have further up is the. Is the Caribbean banking centers. So the unified Caribbean banking centers are third at $350 billion. And Luxembourg is ninth, all by themselves at $200 billion. Belgium is 12th.
And Luxembourg is a wide spot in the road in Europe. I mean,
$137 billion. So anyway, that gives you an idea.
Okay, let me read. This is March 4th, 2015. So this is over a year ago. Now, this is by Sovereign Man. James Black, we know you see his stuff on Freedom's Phoenix quite a bit. He travels the world and yada, yada, yada. When I arrived in Bangkok the other day, coming down the motorway from the airport, I saw a huge billboard and it floored me. The billboard was from the Bank of China. It said, RMB, new choice, the world currency. Given that the Bank of China is more than 70% owned by the government of the People's Republic of China,
I find this very significant.
All right. It means that China is literally advertising its currency overseas, and it's making sure that everyone landing at one of the world's busiest airports see it. They know that the future belongs to them, and they're flaunting it. And it's true. The renminbi's importance in global trade and as a reserve currency is increasing exponentially, with renminbi, trading hubs popping up all over the world, from Singapore to London to Geneva to Frankfurt to Toronto. Multinational companies such as McDonald's are now issuing bonds in renminbi. And wow. Even sovereign governments are issuing debt denominated in renminbi, including the UK. This is already happening.
Right.
So people are going, well, what if? And you think that might go, it's God, where the hell have you been? Yeah. They already did it.
And I think the kickoff for this was how many years ago when they had the last IMF meeting. Actually, it was the thing two ago. When the IMF, the first time, the members began toying with the idea of something outside the dollar. Now, many of us know it's going to get to the China dollar, the renminbi. However, at the time, they wanted to save face. They said, well, we don't really mean our renminbi. We're talking maybe a universal currency that we'll all agree on, but we'll talk about that later. But they floated the idea at the last couple IMF meetings. So they know handwriting's on the wall as they secretly pile up their gold. Now, this gets to the Trump deal. I was talking off the air of the gentleman here about the dog whistle, and I guess it's a term I'm hearing more, and maybe some of you have not. So this political dog whistle is it's kind of used in context where a politician says something, maybe with a wink or a nod, which is in code, quote unquote, to another group, saying or kind of giving you an anticipation of what their real thinking is without stating it. Whether it's for nefarious reasons or for, hopefully positive reasons. And I think many economists, especially some of the Austrian schoolers, Peter Schiff is one of them, many of you know, has picked up on this with Donald Trump. He has said certain things that in code to an Austrian schooler says that he understands some of the underlying principles of the problems that we're going to encounter. I've said from day one, I don't know if Trump understands the philosophy. I know he doesn't get the philosophy the way that we do as libertarians, but I think Donald Trump is a very pragmatic individual. I've compared him to like.
So we're counting on mouse. Roger Stone to pragmatize him.
Well, he's got to learn. I mean, he's like a mouse in a maze. And Donald Trump just goes around, and when he encounters an obstacle, instead of sitting there backtracking and trying to figure out how to use Robert's Rules of Order and delegates and super committees and all of this kind of thing, he uses the culture, like Ernie says, and the power of the media that he has mastered. To go over the wall, under the wall, no pun intended with the walls. But that's his modus operandi is stop blocking me to get to the cheese. And, how far he'll go being unethical. And, I'm not saying he does that. But let's just say there's like in medicine, you can do things that are unethical. And there's also things that you push the envelope because medicine has to evolve. So where is that line? That's a tricky line. But I think Trump does understand the problem. I think he's learned it not from philosophy, but from pragmatism of having international businessmen as his friends. He's starting to see the problem. And the fact that he's said things in the past, the last few months, that he understands it and then has a meeting with Henry Kissinger. I cannot state enough how profound that is, that Trump understands enough of this problem. So that leads to my last part, of the finale to this, for this part of the Trump report. Something that hit me was I believe if Trump does get the problem, that he might be running really as the tough love father figure or mother figure. Someone who knows that someone has to get all the barbs and all the arrows, and he's going to be the man perhaps to take it. Meaning, Democrats and Republicans both, we as a country, we're all going to have to get hit. We are going to get hit when this dollar goes. We're going to be having to pay the piper for generations of mismanagement and corruption. We are going to have to pay this bill, and it's not going to be pretty. We looked at Dr. Paul as being the one to try and fix the problem when we possibly could have when he first ran. The thing is,
hell, he just tell us what the freaking problem the thing is.
Well, can he? He knew the problem, but could he have really fixed it? Because you need to negotiate and leverage
there's
with
no
people.
Fixing.
I know there's no fixing, but there's how do you manage the problem as we go? I think Trump sees it, and Trump's what I think he's going to be is like the doctor who you trust. I was saying off the air that if the if your doctor is a diehard
chainsaw that cut off the gangrenous limb,
if your doctor, imagine if you see a doctor and they're wearing a
you get a transplant for that, Keith.
So imagine you see your doctor to have surgery and he's wearing a Bernie Sanders scrubs, right? Imagine, or your surgeon is wearing a Donald Trump, I'm sorry, a Bill Clinton or a George Bush scrubs. You don't quite trust them, but if you can maybe tick off everybody and say, I work for you, trust me, so therefore when we get the tough medicine, maybe that's Trump's brilliance, that he is willing to take the tough medicine from everybody to go forward and deal with this problem.
At least he doesn't say trust me, he says believe me.
Yeah.
Believe me. Mexico's paying for the wall! Well, I'll tell you what Mexico's worried about now is their remittances. You know, they're blocking you, like, you know, sending money back home, which shoots the crap out of me because then they'll just use cryptocurrencies. It'd be a lot cheaper anyway.
Yeah.
They're paying, like, at least 8 to 20-something percent, depending on where you are in the world. It's ridiculous. So, you know, cryptocurrency is going to play a lot in this. The competing currencies around the world. The end is going to be bright. I see there's going to be a lot of opportunities for people to understand what's going on and create a real economy. Well, we got to go through the worst first.